Hello, peeps. It's International Snagonormy Month here on Tabletop. So if you've got somebody who's not yet into gaming, see if you can recruit them in, get them excited to be a tabletop gamer. And to celebrate, someone's made us t-shirts.
Yeah, we got a letter in from Wilco92. He actually took part in our End Is Nigh terrain challenge.
Yeah.
And he actually got his, I think it was his little niece who got into it.
Yeah.
And now that it's Snagonormy Month, he's taking her for round two to see if he can get her into some Catan and take it to ride.
Look what arrived in the post, man.
Yeah, swanky t-shirts.
Oh, now's the time to Snagonormy.
In this episode, we're giving away a copy of Shadow Pear.
Spear.
Bear.
Bear.
Spear.
Pear.
Spear.
Shadow Spear Battle Box. If you want to be in with a chance to win that, this show, from the purpose of winning, is all about innovation and your opportunity to come up with the wild and crazy ideas of where this industry is headed. As well as that, our liking fest last week was a great success. Well, we don't know if it was a great success or not, but it was nice to see all the likes. So please do help us continue this. Let's see if we can keep it going, keep trying to bluff the YouTube algorithm into thinking that we're not right or left-wing extremists that love war. We're just some random dudes that love war gaming. So if you want to get our stuff and if you want to be in with a chance of winning that prize, watch the show, comment in the whole topic of innovation, click like, and then ding my dong.
After you subscribe.
Oh, yes, you have to subscribe first, and then you can ding the dong. Do you think dinging the dong is one of the reasons why YouTube doesn't like to syndicate our stuff anymore? Are we allowed to say ding and the dong? You're allowed to say gosh darn it.
Yes,
you're just not allowed to say f***.
First.
Okay.
2 minutes.
So, we're going to be giving away the Shadow Spear Battle Box. Do you want to have a look at this? Because I've got to say, I nearly wet my pants. Are you allowed to say, wet your pants?
I don't think you're allowed to say
that. YouTube. Oh my God, look at it! Are you allowed to say, oh my God, on this new YouTube algorithm?
I think you're okay.
Sorry. I'll replace it with something to look at it! It's amazing!
I gotta say, you know, all the folds and the flaps and stuff are amazing.
Do you know what I love about it? I love the fact that I would say the first time ever officially, we have actually seen a camo pattern on a Space Marine. Something that has come up time and time.
You're not allowed to wear camo.
It's something that has come
up. That's how you can tell they're not proper Space Marines and they're Primaris.
Oh, Primaris.
It's proper Space Marines don't wear camo.
I've got to say, I actually really like it.
I'm digging it.
I am really digging it.
It's unusual.
And do you know why I like it? I actually like anything that breaks the mold of what we demand that 40K is. I like it when it starts to break out. Now, I don't know what it is. I did go through a period when I wouldn't have liked it. And I would have sat back and went, STCs and all, blah, blah, blah. But I've got to say, I've had a quantum leap in terms of my opinion on this. And I really like it when the creators and when the designers say, do you know what? Gosh darn that! we're gonna do something different. So I big thumbs up, two thumbs up from me on this one. I am really pleased to see some camo on these guys.
I wonder
I think the model looks amazing.
Yeah. I wonder if they've done that specifically on the librarian, who doesn't need camo.
Yeah,
but have they done that just so they can go? It's a generic ultramarine librarian. It's a generic space marine, but because they've camo patterned his cloak, if you happen to do Templars or Dark Angels who would have the cloaks and the robes on, it means they don't have to do two sculpts.
Yeah.
They can just go, oh, it's not a Dark Angels librarian with a robe on, it's an any librarian, and he's just wearing his camo jacket.
Because that's very
on
cool.
Fleek, I mean, as I believe the kids
I have
say.
To wonder about this one, though, because it's coming as part of a narrative box.
Yes.
The camo and the cloak and stuff that he's wearing actually matches in really well with the scouts.
The scouts look amazing too.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Wearing very similar armor to said scouts.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the main theme of this box. So Shadow Spear is all about these guys going against Chaos Space Marines in sort of like kind of Black Ops style scenarios.
Oh, yeah.
Because the whole big thing about the Eliminators is they're effectively the new scouts that are being thrown into the mix for the Primaris Space Marines. Yeah. And these librarians go with them and they almost cloak them as they're going into battle. So these, with their psychic powers, obviously. So there was.
Oh, you don't mean he puts on the camo cloak then? I thought he just stood there and gently draped the camo cloak over each of them.
But if these guys are going to sneak in somewhere, do we not have like an inherent problem with the librarian there?
What's the inherent problem with the librarian?
He's going to be seriously noisy with that amount of keys. He's not sneaking in anywhere.
I'm sure, like most wizards, he can muffle the sound of his own rustling.
And he doesn't even have a single book stuck to him anywhere.
You see, Games Workshop, you made a mistake. You should have hired him, and then you wouldn't go and gosh darn it up
maybe he's got a set of two protectors or two spreaders to keep the keys apart.
That's it.
What else is in the box there, Justin? Can we scroll down?
Yeah, of course you can. So obviously we have our Primaris librarian.
Yeah.
We have our new scouts. I love what they've done with the actual.
And these are Primaris scouts, aren't they?
Yes. Can you click that image? Make it bigger.
Yeah, I can. So one thing I like about this is, so the old scouts, they were like the neophytes. These look like full Space Marines. They've got the big power packs on the back, but they've actually took the time to put some camo over the top of that as well.
It's really beautiful. And there was an interesting thing about scouts, because certainly in some chapters, scouts weren't always the newbies.
No.
Scouts were actually the most
right up there.
Yeah. So I really like this.
Yeah, we've got the gorgeous bit of artwork showing it all off. I'm seeing a mixture of Reavers, the librarian in there. And then, we get into...
Wait.
Yep.
Kill your jets.
It's just okay.
It's weird because only the librarian managed to really bring his camo.
Yeah, I'm not... Do you know what? I'm not going to sit and praise that particular piece of artwork.
Really?
Yep, because that artwork, to me, is not anywhere near the same quality.
Are you looking at the Space Marine's helmet right
at the front? I'm looking right at the front. See that one down there?
The guy's had it described to him, but he's never actually seen what a Space Marine looks like.
He looks a bit like a character from Pigeon Street.
Yes, yes, he does.
No, I'm not digging it at all, Justin. I think as a piece of artwork goes, that is actually pretty lacking compared to what we have seen in the past.
As some people have said in the comments and stuff online, the person who wins the wars in the grim dark of the far future is the person who can spread his arms the furthest apart.
I'm seeing that as a bit of a sin in this one, though. Thanks for pointing that out, Ben.
Yeah, you will never unsee it.
never unsee it.
Well, let's get back to the minis. What else have we got in there?
So for Chaos, we have some new Chaos Marines that have been designed up. I am digging these because it looks as if they've upscaled them a bit to sort of match in with the Primaris now, because the old Chaos Space Marine sculpt, it was starting to look a bit weedy next to them, like what we used to have with the old Terminators and then the newer Terminators. The next one is gorgeous. New form of Obliterator.
Yep.
This looks like a Centurion that has been infected with the Obliterator virus.
Because
if you look around the feet and the legs, very similar armor style to what we would see on them.
That guy's eating his own head.
Yeah.
It's very good. It's very good. Okay, I'm not a 10, fan.
10,000 can do that.
I'm not a fan particularly of the Chaos stuff. I know that to some of you that will absolutely break your heart. Mini Wargaming Dave, I do love you, man. I know you love Chaos, and I do love you, but I'm not a fan.
It would be heresy.
Do you know what it is? I am very much into uniforms. Mm. Women in uniform. That's my Iron Maiden tribute for this show.
Okay.
I'm very much into. I like my toy soldiers to have a unified kind of a look to them. Mm. And the Chaos. There's nothing wrong with the concept of it. You know, I understand completely. I would never, ever change them. They just don't appeal to me because I'm just not a big fan of all the higgledy-piggledy.
So they feel more like a rabble rather than an army.
Well, the thing is, you have to where a neck should be. Mm. You know, and so it's like, it's just this stuff like that just gets me. You know, but I will say to the whoever sculpted it, awesome job. The Obliterators needed a redo, and this looks amazing. So
it's very much looking like some of the demon designs that came out in the new Doom game in 2016, and I think that's why I like them and why a lot of people are liking them, because they've basically gone for this, you know what, they're chaosified, they're going to be larger than life, they're going to be crazy, let's just go wild with it. And I think it works particularly well for the Obliterators and stuff.
Although the next one is a new vehicle, and hello,
I gotta say, this is the bit where it piques my interest.
This is amazing. Even I like this.
Have you the Venom Crawler.
Have you seen the second? I don't know if it's a second variant of it or if it's just the same kit but built in a different way. So it's got bum in the air, but there's another version where the bum, the abdomen is down, or the thorax, whatever part of the spider is. So it's lower.
The spider ass.
Spider ass. Yes. So somebody's pointed out.
Technical term.
Because 40K is true line of sight. With that model, it can be seen from space because it towers over everything. So everybody will be building it with bum down, where it's creepy, crawly, and sneaky.
Dragging itself
along, going, don't shoot me. Don't shoot me with your las cannons.
It's an absolutely wonderful model, though. Yeah. As a piece of design goes,
It's very reminiscent of The Matrix.
Yeah.
The squiddies and stuff because of all the eyes and the very...
Tentacles?
Yeah, the very animal meets machine.
The thing is, though,
I would like
if you see this now and you see a defiler, you're never going to bother it. Go away, defiler.
The defiler.
I want this.
You can do some cool work with.
No, look at this thing.
I know this thing's cool.
This just
as well.
Whips the butt off it, aesthetics wise.
Whips the spider off it.
I'm a fan of the defiler as well. I've got to say, if I had the time and the skills, I would go full Dave Taylor on this.
Oh, you'd do some conversion work?
And because I believe it was Dave Taylor that took the Orc Jets, it was either Dave Taylor or somebody as skilled as Dave Taylor, took the Orc Jets and brought them back to Imperial Jets.
Ah.
Right.
And I would love to take a model like that and un-chaosify it and see if I could bring it back to something Mechanicus.
I don't know if that would ever even have been Mechanicus.
Oh, it would have had to be.
It would have to be something.
Well, I mean, like, could it have been potentially a Dune crawler back in the day or something?
No, because the Dune crawler is what gave rise to the Defiler.
Yes, but let's just use your imagination.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what all that's about. I would love to see if you could take that and bring it back to look something more Imperium. You know, and de-chaosify it. I think that would be an amazing project, but a project that would be out of my skill level. I would think. Dave Taylor, I'm challenging you. De-chaosify that. If you're up for it, shout me, and we will do something on this because. I would love to see something
like
that.
Shout him.
Yes.
And he'll watch you do it.
Yes. I will talk about it day and night, man. I will talk about it day and night.
Yeah.
You know, so it's... Yeah.
Now, there is also another Chaos character in this box, but I don't think I have an image for it in this post.
Yes.
But he's actually in the artwork. Let me quickly go to it here.
Teddy Westside?
I don't know. It's this gentleman here, the sorcerer with the ram's head.
Oh, Sheep Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we know his name? Sheep Boy.
Yes, we do.
Oh, we do.
He is called the Master of Possessions is his name. So there we go.
He owns all the toys.
He owns everything. Yeah. Well, we are going to be giving away a copy of Shadow Spear. So stay tuned because just in a very little while, not very long, we're going to be talking about what you have to do in our kind of like main kind of theme to win. As well as liking and subscribing and ding and dongs and all that other stuff. Yeah. But that is not the most important release that Games Workshop have teased this week.
Not by a long shot.
In fact, this is the most important release in a decade.
Yeah.
In a decade. The internet went up in arms about this.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen the new Emperor model.
Idea. Resilient hybrid. Once an idea is running, it's almost impossible to run. An idea that is that sticks. Right now,
just look at it! I have been laughing my
togs.
Gosh darn it's off.
You can say togs.
Togs?
Yeah.
Do you reckon we'll get away with togs?
Just like your underwear.
Really?
Yes. I thought it was like a swimsuit, swimming togs.
I have been laughing my gooseberries off all week at this because how do we go here? Do you know what? We just go there.
Well,
I can imagine that every Games Workshop lawyer, of which we assume there are not as many as there used to be, but I can imagine that every legal person within Games Workshop and everyone who has left Games Workshop or sacked for being ineffective has eyes have been twitching like mad. They have probably been sitting, because you know that Games Workshop didn't dismantle the nuclear button.
Oh, no.
They just moved it to the far side of the legal team's office. And because the legal team's office has less people in it, it's quite some distance because it used to be a big office.
Yeah.
So it's sitting at the other side. And you just know, I have been giggling at all the twitching from all those solicitors that have been involved in that. The ones that are in there twitching going, we don't know what to do, we don't know what to do, because we're the new Games Workshop. And then all the old guys going, oh, why did they have to make me leave? I want to go back, I want to go back. What do you do with this? What do you do with it?
I don't know. I guarantee you there's one lawyer in there that's just sitting there cracking the knuckles, ready to go.
But there's nothing they can
there's
do.
There's nothing to do.
There is. I love this.
Why would you do anything? It's the best exposure ever.
Oh, yeah.
But it's Trump.
It's amazing.
Dude.
It's Trump.
No, dude, it has nothing to do with that. It's to do with the fact... This could 40K turn into the new, or was he Pepe the Frog?
Pepe the Frog. Oh.
Could we have witnessed a moment where 40K becomes the inadvertent casualty and suddenly the far right totally adopt it as a meme and we all suddenly become branded extremists because of the thing that we love, and we loved it for 30 years before this?
I don't know. I mean, I have to wonder, is President Trump sitting there going, this looks exactly like me. It is the greatest statue ever.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I could do great deals
I've watched through this, and the eyes move.
Yes,
it's creepy. The arms move. The claws move.
It is something that high. You may as well, all in.
Yeah. It's an absolutely superb piece of engineering. Look, I would like to make a personal plea to the entire... to the entire On Tabletop Beasts of War community, okay? Look, we have never run a Kickstarter, okay? Ninja Division look like they have screwed it all for all of us. We'll talk about more of that backstage tomorrow. But I would like to make a personal plea to the On Tabletop community, okay? So much as we all think Kickstarter has turned into gosh darn it, I think we should run one.
Oh, God.
We want to own this statue, because everybody in the know knows that the On Tabletop hold Games Workshop in the highest esteem. We really do, and we try to emulate their awesomeness in every respect. We would like a statue outside the On Tabletop Visitor Center as a homage to Games Workshop and their Stormcast Eternal, the mighty Stormcast Eternal outside Warhammer World. We think we'd like to make a homage to that. But we reckon if we got that, we could have him straddle the river and he would be like the Colossus of Rhodes in Northern Ireland. So we want a Kickstarter to raise the funds to buy this and have it permanently erected here in Coleraine as the Colossus of Coleraine.
I can
and have it have the sword of Twitter awesomeness pointing at the door of pointing at the door of the On Tabletop Visitor Center.
And now with Game of Thrones going away, we need something to bring the tourists
in. We need
keep the economy going.
Yeah, for us, poor Irishmen that only have alcohol and potatoes. Do you reckon that we as a community could get together and raise the funds necessary to pay this sincere and loving homage to our buddies over in Lenton there.
Depends whether or not the Northern Bank of
Trinity. We love you guys. I think it's amazing.
I'm laughing because our community is crazy enough to maybe actually pull this off.
Oh, we need it, Justin. We need it.
I don't need this in my life. I will have nightmares.
This wasn't... Do you want to play a little bit of it there? Let's see if we can play. Because you've got to see the animatronics on this thing. It's just insane. Look at it.
It's amazing.
The head moves, the eyes move.
The claws move.
The claws move.
Even the legs are moving.
And it's not even the best bit. You know, it's like there was high quality work went into this, okay? Especially in all of the supporting costumes of everybody around it. I particularly was impressed with the Ultramarines.
I got you.
So what do you check out? Look at the eyes.
This really makes me want to see Spitting Image again.
It's just amazing. Right, please,
Come on. They're coming right up.
Okay, Ultramarines are go. There he is! There's the Ultramarines! He's got his helmet on the wrong way.
That's what he's just modeling after that artwork from the back.
That is a quality Ultramarine costume right there.
They're calling it majestic.
It is majestic.
What?
It is majestic.
Look at his majesty.
I think it's fabulous.
That resembles the real Trump
God. Guys, I loved it. It tickled me. It tickled me in every way. I just think something like that is just absolutely hilarious. I love it. Right. Did you know?
Yes.
That today, maybe. This Saturday, is International Innovation Day. Okay? It's where we collectively celebrate innovation and collectively pine that we don't have flying cars and live on moon bases. Okay? But to win the Shadow Spear Battle Box, okay, it came down to two questions, and we had to pick one. One was just what were the GW legal experts thinking? But we thought, no, we're not going down that route. We don't want to know their thoughts. It's okay, let's leave them alone. So instead, we're going to celebrate International Innovation Day because we want you to come up with your craziest, most innovative idea of what you would like to see in the tabletop gaming industry.
Ooh. A giant Trump.
A giant Warmaster Trump.
How are we going to top that?
Okay, so to do that, I want to raise a couple of quick topics with you guys.
Yep.
Just to get you all warmed up into some areas of innovation that I think are galloping towards us. Okay, so I'm only going to very quickly mention 3D printing, just in, because if I don't mention it, somebody will say, what about 3D printing?
Yep. Yeah,
3D printing, it's raised, we know. But we'll talk more about that in future episodes. I want to talk about some other stuff though. Augmented reality. I think this could be one of the coolest things to ever happen to our industry, where you put on a pair of glasses, okay, or a HoloLens kind of a thing, and you're looking at your tabletop, and your tabletop is basically coming to life, and your rules and your stats and things like that are all appearing over the units because it's recognizing all of the units, and you could even tap it for tactical tips where it could give you some kind of like tactical awareness. What would be cool in that is it'd be a great leveler. Where if I'm playing the mighty Jerry with all of his tactical prowess
and terrible dice rolls,
that, you know, it's highly intimidating, you know, but I could have mine set to a 5.
Yes.
And you could have yours set to a 10. And it would maybe give me more tips than you.
Yes.
And try and level the playing field a little bit.
What you could also use tips that on, for tips off. Is multiplayer.
Multipass. So,
well, multiplayer. If you had, let's say you're here in Ireland.
Yes.
You're wanting to play Gianna over in the States.
Yes.
You both lay out the exact same gaming table. It reads where your stuff is on the table on your end, where Gianna's is on her side.
And projects it
onto both.
Oh, Gianna. Oh, we could totally get that going.
So it's not really multiplayer, it's just...
Long distance play.
Long distance play.
That could be cool.
It's been a while.
I want to go back to this idea of having hard settings and easy settings.
Yes.
Because we don't... I've never really heard anybody talk about having a handicap system, really.
Well, you could do a computer-generated AI as well.
That sounds kind of interesting to me.
Yeah. I think it's something that we should be looking at in games is kind of like a handicap system to try and... But here's the thing, right, Justin?
Yeah.
I'm just going to preface this.
All right.
Okay. You know I love you.
Yes.
And everybody knows that I have a deep and long and loving relationship with my mate Justin.
Yeah.
Okay. But when it comes to intro games, he is a total gosh darn it.
I have been working on
this. There is the golden rule of an intro game.
Let the wiki win.
You always let them win. Not our Justin. Justin Alpha strikes every poor sod that has ever come into this, this visitor center. They have been on the receiving end of Justin's most cheesy lists.
No, they have not. And his Alpha strikes.
One poor young man who I tell you what, I'm back and I'm going to sponsor him, okay? Because Justin fielded, what was it you fielded against him? It was six centurions.
Okay, now hang on. Save that, because this is my hobby time for this week.
Oh, come on!
No,
come
this is my hobby on. Time right. for this week. If they want to see it, they can pay their £3.70 whatever and join us tomorrow.
Ooh! Because he's worth it.
I'm definitely worth it.
Yeah, boy!
My tactical genius is definitely worth that amount of money.
We will see full sign-ups this week! yes, okay. Do you know what? I will grant your wish.
Right.
I will save it for backstage. It's worth joining up to backstage this weekend because we're going to be giving away 100 free backstage passes for backstagers to give out to a friend who has never been a backstager. Because tomorrow is the Random Act of Kindness Day. Mm-hmm. And we've got some random act of kindness that we're going to try and build up and do some stuff with our backstagers.
Which because is
we do you know what, backstagers? We love you. You have been amazing. You have been absolutely amazing. And do you know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to right. If you have been a backstager in the past, I wonder if I could reach out and give you something. Leave it with me. And if I can, I will. And you'll hear from me tomorrow. Oh, awesome.
A few moments later.
Yes.
We were talking about innovation.
Before that, we were talking about the handicap system.
The handicap system, yes. Because a handicap system would be good because we could fit it out for anybody that came in for a demo game so that they would actually stand a chance
of winning.
Justin's cheesy nonsense. Yeah.
What?
I think that would be brilliant. Actually, in the grand scheme of things, I think it would be interesting for tournaments and the likes as well. I think tournaments should have seeded players. And in the early rounds of a tournament, I think it might be interesting to have like a golf-style kind of handicap.
Well, no, you don't get them in the early rounds because generally a lot of the games are the round robins. So it means the first one is a random draw.
Right, yeah.
And you could be put up against anybody, but then after that, it's always winner against winner. So the top two winners face each other, and then it trickles down.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the course of a day's tournament play or a weekend tournament, it will bounce where the better players will go up and then other people will find their
level. Do you know
what?
I take it back. You wouldn't have it in tournaments at all because a tournament is a true reflection of the individual skill of the player. However,
campaigns
and narrative weekends, I think it would be a really great way of balancing things a little bit and helping them.
It could be very useful for gaming stores as well that want to actually demo multiple systems.
Yeah.
So if you had a fully digital table,
You're back to the innovation.
Okay. Yeah. No, we're just blue sky thinking.
He's brought us back. That's okay. That's good. You're staying on point. Yeah.
But no, if you had a blank table that it was able to fill out with a projection for different multiple systems, you would have a database of games that you can teach to people in your store with zero outlay except for getting the HoloLens and the table.
Do you know what? This almost makes me want to learn to code.
Learn to code.
Because I want to hack the system. I now have realized that this whole augmented reality thing could be the best thing for me in the world when I'm playing against Justin, because I could hack my army to have a whole load of little dudes with their willies hanging out. And they can all come running over the hill, Justin, just like the old Highlanders with it all flappy glory going on. You're going to love this, man. I'm just going to make your life with this whole augmented reality thing. Will we move on? Next thing.
Just on the whole augmented reality thing. Do you want it to replace miniatures?
No. No way.
That's where the slippery slope leads to.
Well, to be fair, to make that slope a little less slippery, I will only have the appendages augmented reality. Mm-hmm. So the minis will be real. But the Todgers will be virtual.
So for
you're never getting into any of my accounts ever again.
For the remote gaming that Justin was talking about, you would have your army, but it's just because the other person is playing somewhere else. I mean, there's things out there at the moment like Universal Battle where where people do this. They play
if
test
this
their
took
armies.
Off, the masses probably would not be interested in sitting down and playing miniatures.
Yeah,
so they would just want it in a fully projected.
Yeah, that's fine. They can do them.
You know, I'm all for.
But you could have that
let folk hobby the way they want a hobby.
All playing the same game at the end of the day.
I think where this, I think the initial stages of this for me is purely to make it easier to play games. So I could see the guys at Dised, this being their next step into the future, where you know you learn to play a game through augmented reality.
Yeah, through playing.
Yeah. So it guides you and the like. Yeah. So really, Lloyd, in my thing, I just want if my wish list for this. Would be the likes of stat lines,
yes.
Potential, your potential moves, or giving me a quick guidance of if I go, I want to shoot them with this unit. What do I need so as I don't have to sit and memorize tables?
Can this unit see that unit to shoot? Yes. What's the area effect of that? A wee thing pops up to show you.
Yeah.
And it highlights these guys are all in the area of effect.
Yeah. And then if it could then augment it a little bit further and do explosions and little special effects and stuff like that, I know it's kind of cheesy, but I'd really like that.
One thing I'd like
and Charlie's
is actually to be able to play against AI opponents on the tabletop.
Right. Justin wanted to specifically asked for Riffid.
RFID.
Yes. So Justin has been swatting up an RFID and is going to explain to us in great detail how RFID works, what the technologies behind it are.
Why
and
do you
how it's
always
going to...
kill the f***ing lily?
And how it's going to affect our industry. So
actually,
take it away, Justin.
It's a thought I had that could actually be very cool. One of the things that I have loved seeing in the industry is the introduction of neoprene mats. Now imagine a neoprene mat which is actually inlaid with circuitry, which can read RFID, read where your miniatures are on the table, and actually give you an approximate simulation to a digital format with that technology. How do you like that one, Warren?
Why?
I haven't got past Justin and neoprene yet.
My mind stopped at that. Have you gone full sneakers?
So
you could wrap your body in this. But that
would you inject into the neoprene mat?
I don't know. I haven't made the technology, but can...
Oh, you're working on this bit, though.
I am not a scientist. It's an idea.
Yes.
Hang on, Warren. If someone came to you 50 years ago and said, here, what if we made a printer that was 3D? You'd look at them and think they were half cut.
No, you go, all printers are 3D.
Yeah, all printers are 3D. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to work with it.
Well,
you don't.
Okay, but look, the thing about RFID is it's wireless.
Yeah.
Okay, so RFID is basically just it's a chip. Okay.
Yeah, I understand that.
And that chip, as it passes through a field, okay. Basically just identifies itself to the field. So, but the thing is, it works in very close proximity because the field itself actually injects the power into the chip to give it that momentary burst.
I understand this.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize. Apologies, I didn't. Continue.
Right, so the field is generated by your mat and read through the mat.
Okay.
So basically, you could have that being led into a digital format. So say I have a buddy who's actually playing online. He can see what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a way to actually have it light up to show what he was doing as well. I think we actually had something very similar to this in the projects recently.
Yes.
For Space Hulk Challenge.
Okay. So if I may continue then, okay, the mat would be able to give you a one-dimensional read.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, all it would be able to do is to tell you it is there, it exists.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A bit like a chessboard.
Yes. So, well, no, not even like a chessboard.
Checkers.
So all it could do is tell you that something exists.
Right.
If you want to do this right, you need triangulation.
Okay.
Okay. So what you actually need is it to interact with multiple fields.
Okay.
To give, because you need it not one-dimensional, as in I exist, and not two-dimensional. You need it three-dimensional.
Okay.
Okay? So you need a triangulation of fields. So you probably wouldn't embed it into the mat, or what it might be, I don't know if the range would be high enough, but what you need something to create fields where it's getting an intersection of fields.
Okay.
And it's saying that each field is able to say, I exist at this space, this point in space. And then you need a machine then to triangulate that and say where it's at.
Okay.
So I totally agree. I think it would be cool. However, I think it's completely unnecessary.
Okay.
Because I think that augmented reality is going to be able to do exactly the same thing with cameras that you don't actually need RFID. I was a big proponent and I always thought RFID would be a great way to do it. Mm. But I think with the augmented reality, it's completely unnecessary because I think that the sensors inside that you can put inside an augmented reality system actually does away for the need of any kind of RFID because
maybe
it uses a combination of cameras and invisible laser beams.
What you'll find is if you go down this technology route, like either might work, but the camera technology will probably be the cheapest route.
Yeah, that was my next question. Which of the options would be
because
the more
cost-effective? Because you'll be able to buy a system like that, which will be able to do multiple different things, rather than buy one mat that does one thing.
A camera will be able to recognize
fair point.
You know,
well, you've already got that app at the moment, although I know it doesn't work 100% accurately, but you can go, I'd like to measure that point from there to there.
Yeah.
And you get the little digital tape measure and you can hold the camera up and it does that. Mm. And all you really need to do is, if that's already exists, if that could be refined so it was accurate.
Mm-hmm. What have you been measuring that you know is not accurate?
Oh, yeah, various things.
Low blow.
He says it's not long enough. Not that it's not accurate.
it really isn't. So once you've got the measurement, all you really need to do then is to have the secondary part, which is, what is the miniature? What am I looking at?
Mm. So silhouette recognition.
Yeah, well, it's going to have to be some style of that.
Well, so RFID might be an option. I think it'll be superseded. Mm-hmm. I think we'll get exactly the same and more from the sensors that are in a good augmented reality system. Mm. There's one last major piece of innovation. We've always wanted it.
Right.
We've never had it.
Mm. Flying cars.
It has to happen.
What is it?
Animatronic Wii Men!
Not that.
I thought you were on my list. No, animatronic Wii Men. I want my space marines to move themselves.
You want
and
to be small soldiers.
And to be breathing, okay? And basically, the more I send them into attack, the harder I want them to breathe. And I want them to move up and down as if they're getting tired. And then I want them, when they die, to lie down. I think this would be amazing. Surely. We could be at the stage.
I think this would be too emotional.
Do you think so? Watching a little space marine
kill
die.
Each other, and you'd be like, this is horrific.
That's actually really interesting. So we've all played Total War.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm sure. Yes. Now, I am completely without empathy anyway. So I'm quite happy to sit and watch them all kill each other on the battlefield. But do you think it would be different if they were your actual little men's on the tabletop?
Yeah.
And they were actually playing out, dying on the tabletop.
Because they would do things like, you would order them to do something, they'd turn around and go, yes, sir. And then they'd run off and do it and they'd die. And you're like,
so
I sent him to do that.
He's just so cute.
And he died. And it's my fault.
I would never want to paint one of these, just in case I clogged the gears with paint.
Mom, what would you do if you heard a space marine shout, Mom? I'm like, oh, man.
As long as it doesn't shout, Martha.
Why did you say that name?
But how far away could we be? Now, I think animatronic space marines, right? Surely it's not a matter of technology. We're bound to have the technology now to do that. Surely it's just a matter of cost.
Here's an example, right? Do you know when the Xbox came out and it had the camera?
Connect.
We scan our own faces into games.
Yes,
and we were running around shooting each other, but it was our faces.
It was our faces.
It felt weird. Because there was an uncanny valley thing going on there.
Yeah.
Not the regular uncanny valley, but the uncanny valley thing of,
I'm actually about to shoot
and
my
I've
brother.
Just watched him die.
Yes.
So I think it'd be like that with the Wee Men's, because they're just, they're much more like pets.
Yeah. It'd be like little Tamagotchis, all dying on the tabletop.
There was an old movie, Small Soldiers, if you remember it, Warren.
Yes, I do remember Small Soldiers.
Where they actually took weapons-grade chips, put them into toys, and the toys became sentient.
Yes.
It would be like that.
Well, I think that the science behind this would probably be somewhat more complicated than that. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Same concept.
Tommy Lee
but then I'm not an RFID expert, yeah, so I wouldn't know for sure. So I defer to the scientist here.
Ben, what do you think? Would you like little men running around in your room?
Would you like them? Imagine if they escaped from your army case.
Like on that shelf behind you there, they could be running around and saying hello to you in the morning.
Your Battlephone would have to completely change their slogan. It would be no longer protecting your army. It would be
protecting you from your
protecting
army.
Protecting your kitchen.
I'll be like Puppet Master, the movie.
Yeah, I'd love it, yeah. If my little Oathsworn characters could bounce around on the tabletop, that would be wonderful. I'd still feel slightly heartbroken when they died, but it would still be very cool. So, yeah.
Well, there you go. Guys, what is your innovation? What have we missed here? You know, I'm fairly confident that by having Justin on our team that we haven't missed anything, that we've completely covered in great technical detail all of the innovations that are headed our way, but we would like to hear yours. And by posting an innovation below, you could win a copy of Shadow Spear.
Alexa, set a reminder to post a comment below.
That's so evil. Okay, Google, set a reminder to comment on Beasts of War.
Hey, Siri, set a reminder to put a comment on Beasts of War.
Oh, God. Right.
We had to hit them all.
Ben, time to cover some news. We're going to kick off with the Punk Apocalyptic starter set. We've been covering these guys for a while, watching the build-up to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Bad Rock Games have been doing some amazing stuff. They've gone through a couple of different iterations of the game already. It went through Kickstarter, well, I think it was actually Indiegogo to begin with, and it's been going down a storm apparently in Spain. It's a really, really big game over there. And they're actually looking towards their new two-player starter set that's coming out. So in this box, you get a gang of mutants and a gang of gangers, which are all new sculpts that they've gone back to the drawing board with and put together. And you actually see some famous faces in there as well from popular culture, which is very cool.
Oh, I do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Including there's a little bit of a Leela in there, and there's also a Sonic, sort of like the new take on the weird meme of Sonic as well, which is quite fun, which I thought was very good. Mm-hmm. But as well as that, including the box, you'll also get the rule book, all the tokens you need, and dice, and all those kinds of things as well. But yeah, it's just really fascinating to see what these guys have been doing. It's one of these like smaller games underneath the surface that's been bubbling away, a bit like a game like Bushido from GCT and stuff, where it's really, really popular, but it's just not really in the mainstream or anything like that.
Yeah, so, an underground one, yeah?
An underground one, yeah. And one of the interesting things about this as well is that the rulebook's going to be coming out in English and Spanish, so there's going to be plenty of opportunities for us to come and pick this game up and play it for ourselves as well. And I got to say, the sculpts for this are looking absolutely fantastic, and I love all the characters sort of drawn into these, which is really good. So, yeah.
Well, I like him. He looks like
an Olympic t-shirt.
No, do you know who he is a spitting image of? Oh, pants. Sid Vicious. No, not Sid Vicious, the other one. Oh, Sex Pistols lead singer.
Johnny Lee or Johnny Rotten.
Johnny Rotten. Is he not Johnny Rotten? He totally is. That is fantastic.
He's missing a tooth or two there.
Yeah, that guy down there is the Rat Cutter, which is a special miniature you'll get as part of the starter set. And he's the actual author of the Scrap Bridge Gazette, which is like their kind of in-world magazine that comes with all kinds of really interesting sort of like tactics and tips. A little bit like the old Mordheim, I think it was called Warcrier, was their little magazine they did as well for that. Yeah. So yeah, that's really cool.
I will warn you in advance when you come across it, unless there's an issue on my show notes here, there are some strange naming conventions in this, there might be a little bit of lost in translation going on in that. I'm not going to say anything more just yet. You'll find out whenever you come across. But then, it's
that is how they're named.
Yeah,
so just
this is bullet point two.
Yeah, so just beware when you come across. I think that there's a lost in translation thing going on there. But we'll see. Back to Keyforge. Okay, Ben, what's up?
Okay, so the guys at FFG at the beginning of this week talked about a new set of cards for Keyforge, which is their unique card game, and this is the new set called Age of Ascension. And this brings in a whole new set of cards for you to play games with, including new characters, new artwork, and a couple of new mechanics as well. So some of the ones they talked about on their live stream and as part of their sort of reveal article as well was you've got Alpha and Omega. So Alpha cards are cards that you have to play at the beginning of your turn in order to get the benefit from them.
Yeah.
And then there are Omega cards, which have to be played at the end of your turn when you're activating all your cards, and importantly they end your turn immediately, so they're quite powerful or they have certain effects, but you have to balance that against everything else you've got in your hand. The other really key thing to this as well is that they also introduced a new keyword called deploy. So when you're playing Keyforge, you have to put your creatures down to the tabletop at either end of your battle line effectively, so right or left. deploy characters can go right into the middle of that and wherever you want to place them. And they might have things like armor buffs and all that kind of thing, and generally sort of get better for being surrounded by your allies as well. So there's some really interesting things going on there. The other key thing they actually talked about, and they had Garfield on to talk about this, the creator behind this, to talk about how it's going to work in terms of like the old set and the new set and what's going to happen with that. They actually said that all of your Call of the Archon decks were going to be completely legitimate and totally, you know, up to par with what's coming with the new set of cards for Age of Ascension. And one of the key things actually with that as well is that, because a lot of people were actually talking about this, but I genuinely believe that because of the way that the game's set up, where each deck is its own individual unit and it's effectively its own engine, there's no real deck building to fight against something else. So if your engine works from Call of the Archon, it's still going to work in Age of Ascension. Obviously, the proof is going to be in the pudding when we see the game played. But yeah, I can't wait for this. I love the world of Keyforge and all the artwork for it, and I'm just chomping at the bit to play with some decks.
So I'm just waiting to see that AI spit out new names.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait.
I'm fairly certain somebody's gone back by now and has removed some of those words.
Yeah, but then it just has to get more creative.
Yes.
They have actually said that a whole bunch of new words have been added into the system and new parts for the Archons, so I'm sure there's going to be some slight...
It's going to be fantastic. This week's biggest news for me was actually the announcement of Osprey's Ragnarok. So this is a new game from Tim Corklewski.
Corklewski.
Can I just call you Corklewski? Because I just think that's an amazing name. This looks insane. And it's called Heavy Metal Combat in the Viking Age. That's my two favorite things. It's heavy metal Vikings. It's amazing.
Presses all the buttons.
Yeah, so this is from Tim, and this is a new game that has had published by Osprey Games, coming out very, very soon indeed. We've actually been talking with Tim about potentially doing some cool stuff with him.
Please do.
But one of the cool things about this is that it's your Vikings have seen Ragnarok happen around them. The world is coming to an end, the gods are dying, monsters are everywhere, Midgard is being torn apart. So your Vikings decide that the easiest way to solve all these problems is to fight their way to godhood, become the new gods, and completely save the Nine Realms. So this is a campaign.
And the Nine Realms has just been got in touch.
And they work their way all the way up to being gods.
Okay, so the campaign... I think I can translate that. So the campaign is where the Vikings basically fight their way through and work their way all the way up to being gods.
Nice. When's the it's the old question, Warren. Are you a god?
But
yes.
There you go.
But where's the metal in it?
Yeah, the heavy metal aspect to it, Ben?
I'm assuming it's like Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool and their heavy metal football.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, full on.
The heavy metal... The heavy metal aspect of the game is actually comes as part of the mechanics in the game called Godspark. So instead of the combat being just you hit your opponent and try and kill them and do wounds to them, there's actually sort of like a sort of real emphasis on cinematic combat. So throwing your enemy around, tossing them up in the air, bringing trees down on them, smashing them through rocks and mountains. So it's a little bit like the new God of War and that kind of style of like Kratos just ripping people apart and throwing them away on the battlefield and all that kind of thing. So that's the kind of heavy metal aspect to it, which I think is really
all cool. While the Immigrant Song is playing in the background at 11.
All the while the Immigrant Song is playing
in
the background. Yeah. If that's the case, you're going to have to sing your actions.
Yes, you have to. You have to sing your actions heavy metal style. Mm-hmm. I think, do you know what? I cannot wait to play this. I think it's going
to
be...
I look forward to the playthrough on this one.
As I say, we've been talking with Tim, so hopefully we get some cool stuff in the future just about this. I've been talking to him about a Q&A potentially, so that'll be awesome.
Tim, we love you, man. We want your heavy metal Vikings here on Beasts of War on Tabletop, whatever the bloody hell we call ourselves.
You almost
these
just
days.
Went on Tabletop.
Okay.
You're getting
there. We want you on here, Tim. Come to us. Right. Star Wars Outer Rim. Now, this is not the new piece of terrain that we've all been complaining about.
Yeah!
This is actually a board game. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is a new board game from the guys at Fantasy Flight Games, and the idea is that you're going to be playing as some of the sort of like wayward characters from the background, so guys like Lando Calrissian, Han Solo, Dr. Aphra, Boba Fett, and those kind of characters, and you're going to be out there on the Outer Rim trying to make your fortune. Each of the different characters is going to have their own sort of focused objectives. So Han Solo's might be to gain a certain amount of credits, blah, 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 blah. And they'll have their own ship as well, which will be sort of tied to them. And you'll be trying to complete these objectives to turn your character over and then complete another one and you win the game. The big sort of premise around this is it sort of draws a little bit from games like Merchants and Marauders and Firefly, the board game, where as you're going around, encounter cards are going to be drawn for the different planets you land on, and these are going to affect your characters and sort of tell a story on the way as you're going around. It sounds pretty interesting. I'm very interested about it. I mean, Merchants and Marauders and Firefly have got a big following, and people like that kind of exploratory game, that adventure game. So hopefully Fantasy Flight Games have done something a little bit like this here. Maybe they've drawn on some of the stuff they learned from the Fallout board game as well and done something in that kind of vein too. But for anyone who wants to play like a smuggler on the Outer Rim, this seems like a pretty cool option.
So. Mm.
Cool.
You love Star Wars.
I'm known to, yes.
It's not exactly doing it for me.
It's one of those ones, it depends very much on how it actually mechanically plays. Mm. Because otherwise, if it's just borrowing the same sort of style as Firefly or whatever, you're just going, well, it's all that kind of thing. The nice thing I like about Star Wars is the war in the stars and the going around and picking up cargo, less so.
Well, this is the only
good bit of cargo in Star Wars, and that's Han Solo.
I'm with Jerry on this, carbonite. Because like it's important, like what kind of rimwork are these going to be?
Yes.
Yes. As you explore the universe.
Yes.
Well, one of the, like, for example, different characters will have different aspects. So Boba Fett will be trying to do bounty hunting missions, and I know what you said. Lando Calrissian will be trying to deliver goods under the radar and that kind of thing. And there are going to be different ways. And because each of the characters has their own specific objectives, each one's going to play very differently, as will the spaceships that they use as well, like the Millennium Falcon be upgraded and all that kind of thing. Mm. So I think they're trying to draw on the fact that people potentially want to play as Han Solo.
I don't know.
So this gives
them
an idea to do. So, but.
I look at it and I think to myself, since it's come out, I've trying to be objective. I'm looking at it. I'm going, yeah, components look great. You know, it looks interesting, but I look at Star Wars Legion, and I think to myself, that's Star Wars.
Star Wars.
It's everything I want in Star Wars, and I just want
to be
more
battle?
Of it. But the thing about Star Wars
is this why people don't like the Han Solo movie, for example, because it's basically a heist,
and not
a war.
No, because
I actually kind of I liked
it. No problem with the heist, and there were some interesting bits in there, but it was very bland and cobbled together after they got rid of the two guys who were doing all the work.
Yeah,
and they just end up with a sort of a mishmash.
I think you can't really compare it
that way, you know.
I think that's more of an issue. Sorry, with storytelling than it is potentially with the idea of it. Like, for example, when people see games like The Old Republic, those old video games, that's not necessarily all about fighting and war.
No, it isn't.
And I think the storytelling aspect of that and the role-playing aspect is what drew people in. And that's kind of what they're trying to do here with this. They're trying to give it almost a pseudo role-playing feel where you go around
playing
a character. But,
on a couple of different levels. Firstly, on the Solo movie, I sort of enjoyed it. I think what killed the Solo movie for me is we already know what happens to Solo.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It wasn't much of a mystery, and it was a part of his backstory that I never really... I've never, in all my time of being a Star Wars fan, thought, I need to know the backstory of Han Solo.
It also changed Solo, because, like, the Greedo shooting first.
Mm. Yes.
Which is obviously nonsense. Regardless of what George says, you're a useless slug, Lucas. Shut up. Solo was a guy who would sit in a cantina, try and bullshit his way out when somebody came looking for money. When that didn't work, shoot him, chuck a credit to the barman and go, sorry for the mess, I'm away.
Yeah.
So whenever he takes the stuff and sods off at the end of A New Hope and goes, yeah, thanks, got a death mark, see yous.
Yeah.
It's been nice knowing you. Good luck with that Death Star thing. It's been awesome. That was him. That's his character. He's gone. He's looking out for number one.
And it was believable.
And the redemption of him coming back was the whole thing.
Mm. He didn't need to be redempted earlier in the story.
No.
And that's what Solo tried to do.
Making him not all out for himself throughout the entire film is pretty much he is end of Star Wars / Empire or Jedi. Yeah. Solo, he's the good guy that we all know and love. Yeah. And then at the very end, they go, oh, but he shot Woody Harrelson. You know, that was a bit mean of him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, we're digressing slightly.
Anyway,
quick question.
But again, this board game, specifically about the board game, it's exploring something I think has already been explored to death in Firefly and the like. Right. If I was sitting down to a board game of this ilk, I know it's very different in so much as it's a 4X. I think I would rather play the Star Trek game from Gale Force 9 than...
You are always boldly going.
Can I ask a question here?
Yeah.
is this maybe a game that's just not meant for you? Would this perhaps appeal to someone who's maybe more into the expanded universe, reading all the books and stuff?
Justin, everything appeals to somebody, man.
Yeah. And oh, I know, but this is just something I'm wondering.
You know, you're absolutely right. My opinion on this doesn't count whatsoever. I'm just raising that to think it's just
because I know someone out there who maybe loves the expanded universe.
Absolutely.
I love the expanded universe.
All right, then,
I'm a long time Star Wars fan, and I just find it surprising because I was the one who always thought I would love absolutely everything Star Wars.
Yeah.
And now I find myself in a position where I'm realizing, and I suppose I'm just more surprised myself, that I'm not actually loving everything Star Wars.
Okay.
To be fair, I was never much of a fan of the Star Wars lunchboxes and all of that there. But I mean in terms of actual serious takes on Star Wars entertainment.
Mm. Yeah, you thought you would love everything.
Which is now part of it. I look at...
Did you love Caravan of Courage?
Battlefriend, it was better, but you know, hey-ho.
I just look at it and I just wonder to myself, is it
oversaturation?
Is it an aspect of Star Wars that I want to explore?
One of the things we looked at whenever Disney got the license, and it was like, they're just going to keep releasing these things forever. I hope you like Star Wars because they're never ending. Mm. And I have no problem with that as long as it's worth watching.
Yeah.
And Rogue One showed that you can do a war film / special ops type of film in the Star Wars universe. The universe is not the problem. It's what they do with it. So having a heist movie, a Star Wars heist movie, if that had not been Solo, and it is essentially the film of how Han Solo got his stuff. How do he get his clothes? Where do he get his gun from? Where do he get his ship from? Where do he get his herring mate from? Mm. That is what we find out in this film. It's where he got his stuff. There was no real story behind any of that. But if they'd gone, here's a heist movie, it's got a train robbery, like Firefly, we want that all look great. Mm-hmm. If it had been some other punter on the back there, and it didn't have the baggage attached, it probably wouldn't have been as badly perceived.
I think so.
And so you've got a universe to play in. You can do whatever you want. People will like it. Maybe it's because this isn't my style of game so much, but people will go, oh, it's Star Wars, and it's this round robin, collect and smuggle. Mm. Great, love that. But they've got a big universe to play in. They can go and do a 54mm skirmish game. They can go and do a war game or an RPG or... It's boundless.
I think this is why Knights of the Old Republic and stuff were so good, because you were exploring outside of that central thing. You were exploring new stuff, new characters. And this is what I would like to see. Like, my blood runs cold at the prospect of a movie about the Mandalorian. What do you call him? Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Even a movie about Obi-Wan Kenobi. I want Disney to go elsewhere.
Expand it. If they went, we are going to go and do Revan's story in the Old Republic.
I was a big fan of Rogue One. I thought Rogue One showed huge promise.
It was the Dirty Dozen.
What the universe could support.
The Dirty Dozen in space.
Yeah. Mm.
I was going to say, I think this is where what they're doing next with this Bounty Hunter movie that they're coming out with, I think that's where they're going in the right direction, because everyone thought it was just going to be about the story of Boba Fett or the story of Jango Fett, but it's not. It's
about, I hope they're not in it.
Yeah, it's about a different guy, so I just like that idea. Yeah. So it should be fun to see what they do with that.
It remains to be seen. We'll know better when we get a chance to play Outer Rim. This is an interesting one.
This is amazing. I seen this morning and immediately went to Ben going, have you seen this, Ben?
Oh, Jesus.
Dungeons & Dragons, The Stranger Things.
Oh, God, set. Why?
What do you mean, why?
Oh, God, why?
There's a generation of people who only know about Dungeons and Dragons from that TV show.
This is
amazing.
This is snagging.
I feel like such a numpty because I was sitting there looking at that going, what's the connection? And I've just dawned on me what the connection is.
This is absolute snagging. And it's mentioned in February during On Tabletop's International Snagging Month.
Yeah.
Yes!
Okay, so Stranger Things season one, fine.
Yes.
Season two gives me such levels of rage you would not believe. I have shut out my TV for this goddamn show.
But other people are enjoying it.
Yeah, they're more than welcome to.
And remember, as you kindly pointed out to me,
yeah,
our opinion counts for
I never said those words.
But hold on, Justin. This crossover is fine.
Yes.
Like, if we can have aliens versus predators or predators versus Draculas on a Titanic, we can certainly have this.
Okay, you can have this. All I'm saying is Stranger Things season 2, give me rage and put me right off it.
Well, just play this as season 1. Yeah.
Well, Ben, what can you tell us about it, mate?
So this is going to be a new star set that's coming out from Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro, and it's based obviously on Stranger Things. So it's actually the adventure model inside it is the one written by Mike, one of the characters from the show, called Hunt for the Thessal Hydra. Lovely. And it's the adventure that they play through. Additionally, added to that, each of the different pre-generated characters are their characters from the show, which is really cool. And they've also got some additional bits and pieces in there to take your characters from level 1 all the way through to level 5. And of course, the basic rules for D&D are free online to go and pick up as well. So you can take things a little bit further if you want to with some loads of free stuff, effectively. Yeah. The starter set for D&D is actually only like $9, $15 from most American stores, about £10 most UK ones. So it's a pretty good thing. And this one comes with two little miniatures. So you've got a two Demogorgons. One of them is painted and one of them is unpainted for you to do whatever you want with it, which I thought was a really cool idea. But yeah, just a really awesome intro to Dungeons & Dragons, going through that adventure. I mean, I already have D&D out the wazoo, but I am totally going to pick this up, I think, just still just like...
Oh yeah.
Hasbro, I just want to say thank you, because it's stuff like this that is great.
Because I watched Stranger Things when it came out and was like, this is amazing, and at no point did I go, we need this adventure.
Yeah,
I need this in my life. And then they went, we're doing this. I'm going, oh, I do need this.
I need this in my life.
I was like,
yeah.
it's everything that the kids did.
I love it.
As a product, I love what they've done with it. I will give them that, because the amount of distressing and stuff they've done on the box to make it look like that old beat up box that you have sitting in your attic is really cool.
Yeah. Even the additional booklets that are included within the box have a little bit of that distressing to make it look like AD&D and first edition D&D as well. So I think it's a really, really cool idea. And as you say, it's going to be helpful for snagging normies.
Yep. And
fantastic.
And if you're wondering, the little metal Demogorgon that they used in the show is available. It's the old Grenadier Demogorgon.
It's
available from Merlitan Miniatures in Italy. So I'll be ordering one of those so I have the real one.
There you go. There you go. Right. Next up, we have an interview.
Yes.
Sam gets to sit down with Needy Cat Games and George Mann, and they're discussing a brand new announcement, so check it out.
Hello everyone and welcome. I'm Sam from On Tabletop, and I'm really excited about today's interview. Okay, so we are joined by our old friends James and Sophie from Needy Cat Games.
Hello!
And beside them we have the writer George Mann.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming on board. Now, some of you might already know George, but I'll leave it to you all to make your big announcement, as it were, if we want to just get that out of the way right off the bat.
So should we say what we're doing?
Yeah.
Go on, George. We're going to make a board game using the New Breen Hobbs characters and setting from my books.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
And this is the first time we kind of said it out loud on camera. This is This is a big moment for us.
Yeah.
It really is.
When I got the email about this, I was really excited. I went off, I did a bit of research, I'll admit. I hadn't come across New Breen Hobbs before. I'd seen the books in the store, but I hadn't read them. But as soon as I did my research for this interview, I immediately ordered myself a book one of the series.
You're in for a treat. They're a cracking read.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that because George is holding
up. I've got a gun to him just here.
Let's just get a brief introduction of you all for those who don't know you. First, James and Sophie, if you want to start off.
So, James and I are Needy Cat Games. Needy Cat Games is a small games design studio based in Nottingham. Most recently, we've worked on Hellboy the board game, which was an amazing, amazing experience, really great fun. We've also got some other things in the pipeline that we can't quite talk about yet. It's been a great, 18 months so far with Needy Cat Games?
So I'm James. Hello. Some of your viewers might know me. I've been on the show a few times in the past. I used to be Mantic's community manager, so I came and did the Dreadmore Academy series with you guys a while back, some Kings of War videos with Justin. This is what we've been doing so far for the last 18 months. Also, I'm working on a game called Roadie's Rule with Mark Gibbons. I think we spoke about that spiel. That's still happening. It's on the boiler. This is this is our first game as Needy Cat Games completely that we're doing kind of off our own back, yeah. that we've not been approached by someone else to do. So this is very exciting.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm George Mann. I'm a writer. I've been writing New Breed Hobbs books for 10 years now. So we're just celebrating the 10th anniversary of the first book in the series. Also, I've written for Doctor Who, just announced a Star Wars book recently.
Just
as well.
A couple of little things.
Just a couple of things. about 30 books down the line now, and I've been writing professionally for 10 years.
As someone who wants to break into professional writing myself, I am seething with jealousy on this end right now.
Keep going.
Thanks. Okay, so can you, George, can you tell us a bit about Newbery and Hobbs? Yeah. How many books are in the series? What kind of books are they?
Okay, so there's four novels already out, and a fifth one comes out next week, actually.
When this goes out, this might already...
So when this goes out, there's a new book that's hit this week.
There you go, two announcements.
Yeah, as well as a comic book series and a bunch of other stuff. And Newbery and Hobbs, it's a mystery series, really, essentially, set in an alternative version of Victorian London. So it's 1902, and in the real world, in our real history, Victoria would have died, but in Newbery and Hobbs' London, Victoria's being kept alive on a kind of steampunkish life support throne, and she's going slowly mad, basically. and Newbery works for her. He's it's a universe where there's kind of the occult means something. So there's occult and supernatural threats. There's kind of weird technological threats as well, from a kind of steampunky sort of theme. And Newbery and Veronica are there as a kind of first line of defense, and they work for the Queen. But they're slowly realizing that she is going bonkers, and perhaps they're working for the bad guys. So that's kind of the ongoing theme of the books and comics.
I absolutely love that mix of the steampunk and the supernatural. That's a focus I really like.
Yeah, it's very much kind of, when I started writing the first book, I was just trying to draw on all the things I love, basically. It was sort of a kind of melting pot of Doctor Who, Steven Peele from The Avengers, Sherlock Holmes and Hammer Horror. And that's kind of, that's where it comes from, really, with a bit of folklore.
That's a hell of a mixing point.
It's funny that you mention Steven Peele. I've seen, I was looking through some of the comic images, and like, and I can really see that now you mention that.
Yeah, it's there a real influence. It's mainly from that kind of A, the quirky side of those stories, and B, the just the dynamic between the two characters. It was really obvious that Emma Peel isn't just an assistant to Steed. She's a fully formed character in her own right, and that's really what I wanted to do with Veronica as well.
Yeah. I just realized as I said that I said Stephen Peel rather than Steven Peel. I have lost major geek creds. It's been a long time.
We'll just pretend it never happened.
Yeah, never happened. Never happened. For those of you who haven't watched the original Avengers show, I really recommend it if you like.
Maybe skip the film.
Yeah. Oh.
Skip the modern film.
That's another thing that never happened.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Go back to the Stephen Peel, the black and white box set. The first one is brilliant. Yeah.
So, how did you first come to be writing this series? How did you find yourself writing that first book and then realizing, oh, I've got a series on my hands here?
Well, I was really lucky, to be honest. I wanted to be a professional writer for a long time and published books, and I'd done some nonfiction, and I'd done a small press novella, science fiction one, and I wanted to write a big epic space opera. Largely because that's what I was reading, and I thought that's what's going to sell, that's what publishers want. So I kind of used to sit at my computer around work, you know, I was in full-time work, and try and write this book, and it just kept failing over and over again. I'd get to chapter 7 and it would just fall apart.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who worked for Waterstone said to me, look, just write something for you. Remind yourself why you like writing. Don't worry about whether it's going to get published. And I kind of thought, well, that's a great idea. I need to do that. So that's where all these influences came in, and I just thought, I'm just going to tell a story for me. And I got started writing, and I managed to break the chapter 7 curse, and I just kept going. And I got about halfway through the first book, and I sent it to my friend Michael and said, look, it's worked, thank you. And I didn't, what I didn't know is that he, because he was working at Watson's, he's plugged into all these publishers, and he sent it to a publisher to show them. And like the first thing I heard of it was I got a message from the publisher saying, we read the first half of the book. If you finish it, we'll buy that and a sequel.
And you didn't have been pitched?
No, it had been pitched to them. Oh, no, Michael was just, and it was a small publisher in the UK who picked it up. And they put the first book out. And on the back of that, I had a bidding war in America for the book. So I ended up going to a really big publisher in America who then committed to a series. And it's just gone from there, really. It's just, you know, and I've written these, all the books in the Newbreen Hobbs series. And there's another series as well, Tales of the Ghost, which are set in the same universe 25 years later. So overall, there's 12 books currently that in this kind of alternate universe.
Are we calling it the Maniverse? Is that...
I call it the Albion Mythos.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
The Maniverse, yeah. I like that.
The Albion Mythos, that is a great name for it. Yeah. And of course, now it's gone from novels to comic books and now to the board game. How did that come about? How did you all get together and start working on this?
Yeah. Well, I think what happened originally was that we actually had someone approach us who wanted to make the game and said, I would really like to make the Newbreen Hobbs board game. And we were really, really excited about the opportunity.
And they approached us and George
separately. Yeah. And we started talking about it. But then it transpired that they had some other things in their schedule and they couldn't quite fit it in and they had other priorities. And we were absolutely, you know, fair enough. These things happen. You have these sort of pitch meetings and you chat about things and then quite a lot of the time they don't happen. So, you know, we moved on. But the longer we thought about it, the more we got excited about it. And we were just like, oh, I really want to do that game. So then we ended up talking to George directly. And we were just like, do you want to just have a go at doing it as us?
Do a joint venture.
Yeah.
And we've known each other for quite a while anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of the big draws of working on the project was, you know, we know each other.
Together, yeah,
exactly. And so we thought, yeah, we've got enough, you know, connections and links around the industry, we probably can, you know, make this happen.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Yeah. Well, it was always a long-term goal for us. I think Needy Cat Games has always been, with our eyes in the distant future, was, oh, well, one day we'll be able to make games for ourselves. But this was just such a great opportunity that we've kind of not given it up. We really want to make sure.
We've got a bit between us here. I mean, yeah. I've always been a gamer and love board games. I've always wanted to be involved in board games. And I love telling stories in different forms. Yeah. And I'm sure that's something we'll talk about in a while. But this was an opportunity to do that as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this interesting, you know, series of events which has ended up, you know, being a real opportunity for us. So, yeah, really excited.
The game itself, how does it play out? What sort of game can we expect to see?
Yeah, shall I field this one?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. So we don't want to say too much yet. We've got like a whole promotion plan. We're going to drip things out so people can sort of, you know, get to see what's happening as we go along. But to give you a real sort of rough top-down view, it's an investigative narrative-based game with kind of branching narratives. So you will make choices within the game. You're playing as a core set of adventurers.
Newbury and Hobbs.
Investigators, yeah. Newbury, Hobbs, Bainbridge, various characters from the series. And you will go through, you will be investigating leads, following clues, working on one large kind of investigation over the course of the game in a campaign mode kind of thing, broken down into individual chapters, like a novel, each one of which has its own, you know, mini investigation going on within it. So it's very much like reading a book. The difference is that you have choices and your choices will matter, that everything you do will have a consequence.
Yeah.
You might choose to follow a certain lead which will close down other leads. And then as well as that, because of kind of our background, we thought it'd be really cool to introduce, as well as just the core narrative, an element of like a tactical miniatures game. So there'll be certain points where, having, you know, gone around and followed various leads, you will suddenly go, right, now there's an action scene. It might be a chase or a stealth scene or a fight. Because, yeah, there's a good few punch-ups.
Yeah.
Well, I think that reflects the books really well, though, because the books are a really beautiful blend of sort of investigation and, you know, doing all the sort of the slow stuff, and then it will suddenly go to an action scene. We've tried to reflect that in the game, which means that you move onto a board and you have board pieces, and that action will be reflected in the board, and then it will go back to the narrative. And what's really exciting about that as well is that George is going to be writing all of the narrative for the game. So,
So this isn't, I think it's quite a rarity when you use the, at the moment there are so many licensed board games out there, so many games that are working with an established IP, but they're just kind of borrowing from it. Whereas here, because George is completely on board and collaborating on this, this is a canonical entry in the series. This is new stuff.
Yeah, it's a brand new story that takes place within the world of Nubian Hobbs. And we're even going as far as introducing a new character in the game, who will feature in later stories as well.
Yeah.
So it's a proper installment.
And I love that. That to me is so exciting. I mean, I'm a big fan of you know, I love anything where you get to play with an IP in a different way. Yeah. Back when the Matrix movies were out, there was a whole series of, like a video game, a set of graphic novels. They all fed into the main continuity.
Yeah.
And when you then watch the later movies, you're like, oh, hang on, that's the character from that thing. Yeah. And that's what we're doing here. And that's really exciting.
Yeah. And I think what's really exciting is that we get to play with the canonical sort of story as well, because you're going to be able to make decisions throughout the game, and you're going to be able to choose which way you go. Do you chase that person, or do you investigate what they left behind? That will then mean that your journey through that story might be different to what the canonical story is.
So there'll be a through line thread, which is, you know, what happens in the world of Newbury and Hobbs.
Yeah.
But of course, yeah, you might go off that path and tell a different version of the story.
Yeah.
It's a whole kind of what if situation, which is great. I think it really treads that really interesting line between it's a narrative which we're telling, but also the players get to have their own say on what happens. And that's, it's really exciting.
Absolutely.
Having that level of, I suppose, official involvement with it just makes the game feel so much more impactful with the world you're creating there. So in terms of, George, you writing the background for this book, for this game, how did you go about that? How did you approach that? How did the gameplay shape your writing, or how did your writing shape the gameplay?
Well, it's still in process, to be honest, because we're still working on all of those elements and refining the story. But essentially, this definitely wasn't a case of me going, right, guys, here's a storyline for you, go and write a game of it. It's been a proper collaboration. So I've kind of set up this is what's going on. These are who the villains are. This is what they're trying to do. This is what the characters are investigating. And here are some of the key elements from the Nubian Hobbs stories that we want to bring into play. And then these guys are working on, okay, well, that fits like this with gameplay, and we've got some puzzles that we want to put in. So what sort of situations could Newbury be in that would reflect this puzzle? And so we're kind of going back and forth on that and developing it and refining it through the process. So it's definitely a proper collaboration.
Mm. Yeah, which is so nice. I mean, it's so rare to have that kind of level of back and forth.
Yeah.
And again, because it's just the three of us. I mean, we've got a few people waiting on in. Some people will announce later who are helping that out, some stuff. We're very exciting. Because we are the core team.
Yeah.
It is, there's no red tape, there's no bureaucracy. We just go, right, here's some ideas. George, go, off you go. And it's so fast working this way. I love it.
Yeah.
And as well, it means that sometimes when we're having planning meetings, we'll just suddenly evolve a whole concept of like, oh, well, if this happened, oh, yeah, but that thing could happen. Oh, yeah, but then this thing could happen. And then, oh, yeah, and then the way that could work in the game is like this. And that's such a rewarding development process to have that kind of such an organic way of growing both the story and the game at the same time is so rare. I mean, this isn't a case of us buying an IP, you know, licensing an IP and slapping that on top of a game that we've already written. This is very much like this has been grown from the very ground up as being a full collaboration and development.
Yeah, and because of that, I've been able to seed it into other Nubry and Hobbs things that we're doing as well. I haven't even told these guys this yet, but I managed it. There's a short story that's kind of a prequel to the story, the main story we're telling in this book, and I managed to get that story put into the back of the UK edition of the Revenant Express. So we're setting up some of these characters now. The book that's just coming out is going to lead into the game, so that's people who read that will be able to recognize, you know, when we announced the full story of the game. So
I just love the fact that this is coming as a surprise to you now. So
I haven't had a chance to tell him yet. It was a last minute thing.
Also, George will also be doing a novella that's part of it.
Yeah, so I'm going to take that kind of canonical path through the game story and write that as a novella, which we're going to feature as part of the Kickstarter promotion for the
I think what's interesting is that means that people that are fans of the series but don't necessarily want to play the game, you know, because some people don't want to play games. I don't understand them. I don't want to play games. They can read the story and stay filled in.
Yeah.
Also, I think what's lovely is people can play this game, discover this world, and then go back and there's the graphic novels, there's the novels. There's so much. People, this is going to be a really nice, interesting mix of people approaching the series in different ways.
Yeah. There's even three soundtrack albums as well. You know,
we've been writing to them. They're great.
So you know, people can play those albums while they're playing the game as well, and have that atmosphere going.
Which is great. I mean, we spend a good 5 minutes for any game working out a Spotify playlist. You know, this saves all that work.
So, can you give us any hints about what's going to be happening in this story or the novella?
Go on, George.
Yeah, well, we don't want to give too much away yet, but in good old-fashioned kind of Nubian Hobbs style, there's a sinister cult that has its roots in ancient Egypt, but it's been tempered by kind of Anglo-Saxon mythology. So it's a kind of just strange cult that's on the rise in London, and Nubia and Veronica, and accompanied by Bainbridge and Amelia, who's Veronica's sister, are investigating. Trying to prevent the cult from doing what the dastardly deeds they want to do, and this, you know, I don't want to go too far into kind of the things that feature, because we want to reveal, and we've got some amazing artwork for the cult isn't just kind of guys in robes. There's a lot more.
We've got one piece of concept art which I think we're going to accompany this with. I think
so. They take mummies from ancient Egypt and they put them into brass exoskeletons and reanimate them. So we've got these shambling kind of pseudo mechanical mummies called the Saved, and that's kind of one of the tools they use in their sinister plans in London.
And we'll leave it there.
I won't give away any more.
Okay, so you mentioned briefly Kickstarter there. When do you plan to take this to Kickstarter?
Summer.
Yes. Originally it's summer. We've got some rough dates, but the thing is, as we said, this is the first kind of attempt at all this for us, so we're figuring out exactly how long things take. We're working out all the financial details and everything, all the boring behind the scenes stuff that no one really cares about, so we don't want to kind of nail ourselves to a date just yet, but it's summer.
We're really determined as well to not run at this with it not being fully planned, so we are making sure that we, you know, cross all the T's, dot all the I's, and make sure that we're doing our research before we take it to Kickstarter. So this isn't a thing where we're just like, oh, I've got an idea, I'll stick it on Kickstarter and see if it works. We're taking this really seriously. We want this to be a really amazing, brilliant game, which people can support on Kickstarter and will go to retail afterwards. So it's not something where we're just going to rush at it. So we are being really cautious about that.
Yeah, I think that's it. We want to deliver everything that we say we're going to deliver, and we want it to be the best quality it can possibly be as well. So this, you know, hopefully it'll feel like a lush product as well.
Mm.
So in the meantime, where can people go to find out more about either the game or Nubry and Hobbs themselves?
Mm.
So I'm just... this week, so it'll be live when the video goes out. I'm going to launch a Nubian Hobbs Facebook page, which is probably going to be the best place for people to hear information about the project, as well as new Nubian Hobbs stories, places to go to find out about the existing books and comics.
Mm-hmm. Also, we've got the Needy Cat Games Facebook page, Twitter. You can check out our website.
We shall put the links below, I'm sure, right, Sam?
Yeah. I'm certain we can do that.
Yeah,
brilliant. And also, of course, George, you're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter as well, so people can find me. I'll make sure that you've got the information for that as well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's about it. Thank you all very much for coming on board and letting us know about this.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, okay. Are you guys fans of Nubry and Hobbs? Are you excited to find out more about this? Please be sure to leave us a comment below. Let us know your thoughts. And we're going to carry on here, and we'll see you in the next one.
Okay, guys, so if you fancy some steampunk-style George Mann awesomeness, go and head over to the Needy Cat Games website and go and check it out. Right, Kickstarter time.
Yes. What's that, then?
I have a couple of groovy Kickstarters.
Sweet.
Okay. The first one is ultra groovy. I think you're going to love this. I don't know what it is, Jerry.
Oh, I love it.
But you have converted me. I am now a man who's obsessed with standees. we've been having a look at standees on backstage recently, and lo and behold, you know, you go for a decade without any substantial standee action.
Yep.
And then suddenly
three come along at once.
This is a new one. This is one by Wolfung Games. And I particularly like these ones because they look like they're kind of plasticky, shiny kind of standees. Mm. So I'm not exactly sure what the materials are.
So what they've done is they've got a Perspex and then they're printing front and back on the Perspex. Oh. So instead of being like laser cut HDF, whatever, you've got laser cut Perspex. So they come on a sprue. But what they've done, which I think is utterly delightful, is they've hit multiple periods at once.
Yes.
So you will have the option to do Ancients, Napoleonics, American Civil War, and the
American Revolution and Wild West as well.
Wild West with the mountain men and their dogs is just to die for. There are also two different scales. So there's standard 28mm and 18mm for sort of grand scale.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in love with them. Some people, it's a Marmite looking thing because I have a couple of friends who looked at it and went, I hate the faces. It looks like a Photoshop because every face is like unique or individual and it looks like the little tiny faces have been put on afterwards.
Yeah.
I really love it. And especially when you're looking at the smaller 18mm scale.
It's a good example of the faces.
Yeah, the faces. I love them.
I have absolutely no problem with those. And they stand out more in 28mm, but whenever you look at the 18mm ones and you look at how far away you'd be looking at them on a battlefield, they're a lot clearer and more recognizable than if they'd probably gone for a more ultra-realistic look to them.
Ah, so it's almost the...
It's almost photorealism.
And the heads are slightly oversized.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's got a little bit of a chibi kind of a thing going on.
But like just the collections they're doing is
But for the longest time, I love them.
Just imagine
those guys.
Yes.
How weird you would feel if they were running around killing each other.
No, 342 miniatures in that antiquity collection.
Can you call a standee a miniature?
Yes.
Yes.
Because miniature wargaming started with two-dimensional lead soldiers.
Oh,
it went standees, then it went lead, and then as the casting and sculpting got better, then they became more three-dimensional. So very much, yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh, no, it would definitely count them as minis.
One of the cool things is that they're working on this sort of like looking to, I think it's around 2,500 unique styled historical miniatures. Yeah. But in the future, they're actually looking to get up to something like 16,000 once they get to the different periods that they like, which I think is absolutely fascinating.
I mean, for people who are going, I fancy doing Rome, Lloyd, and going, I don't want to have to paint a million Romans, but if you don't paint a million Romans, you don't get the look of Rome.
That's it.
Having this right out of the box and not having to do much work to get them out there.
Plus the war machines.
Is absolutely great. Mm-hmm. Not just the war machines. Wait, you see, there's things like, there's the French farmhouse, there's like the Huomont farmhouse and all sorts. Yeah. They've got buildings coming later on, and every single thing they've thrown out so far, I've gone, yeah, this is great. So
it's kind of like a one-stop shop. So of their collection, I don't know. I'm looking at it and going, oh, because which one would you go for? It's almost like it's like a gigantic sweet shop, isn't it?
It really is. Well, currently, because I had looked at the Wild West stuff and went, I'm not going near that. It's not a period that I'm not going to say I don't like it because I've got several rule sets, but it's not a period that I'm currently interested in.
Yeah.
I'll skip that. Well, I looked at the Napoleonics quite seriously and the Ancients, and then out this week for my regular Wednesday games night, and one of my mates was going, have you heard of the World of Fun? And I went, oh, yeah. And he went, no, but this thing, the World of Fun, is... And I'm going, little standees? And he went, you have heard? I'm going, yeah. He went, I'm going for the antiquities. And I'm going, are you? He went, but the mountain men have a dog. I'm going, ooh, maybe you want to get the mountain men then. Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, look, here, there's Hougoumont.
Yeah. So definitely Ancients, because there's so many great games I have that I don't have the time to put ancient armies together for.
Mm-hmm.
Napoleonics, standees are a great way of doing it in big scale.
Yeah.
And all of these will probably be 18mm. And then possibly maybe some 28mm Mountain Men and Wild West style.
Yeah.
Just for difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, that with the, even with the big photorealistic heads,
yeah,
in the 18mm scale, I don't think it's as bad. Even in the 28mm scale, I still quite like it.
I can
understand. I know a few people on the forum looked at the post when this came up during the week and went, no. I was interested, and then I seen the art style and went, no, thank you.
Yeah.
So, but it's nice. They've been working on this sort of two, 3 years. in the background, mm-hmm. and they're taking the Kickstarter to launch it. What? But they've got a setup in the States and in Transylvania, mm-hmm. Which means theoretically, if the Kickstarter is successful, and I think it should be because it seems to
it's nearly funded already.
Yeah, so it's been trucking along quite well. It's not been setting the world alight, but
it's standees,
right, yeah. But for going, we're not just going to do ancients. We're going to pick sort of like two or three or four of the biggest genre. So they've stayed away from World War II, but they've gone, what are the interesting periods? Mm-hmm. Let's do them all at once, and then we'll have depots one on either side of the Atlantic where they can just fire these things out from.
What do you get? Do they come like pre-popped out?
They come on a sheet. They come in lovely little metal tins as well. Yeah. So you pop them out.
The stickers are already on it.
They're already on it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's how it comes.
Yeah, that doesn't really show.
It comes exactly on a sprue.
You push it out. Then afterwards you can store them away in your little metal tub.
Similar to board game tokens and stuff.
Yeah.
It just pops out.
Yeah.
But it's in the perspex.
The perspex done and the print's already on there. Yeah. So all you're doing is just clipping them off. And I would clip. There's like a video unboxing with a prototype where the bloke's just going pop, 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 pop,
do you know
pop,
what, do you know
pop. And all I can think is, you're going to break a bed. Just cut them off. Get a pair of clippers, man.
Yeah.
Do you know what's cool about this, though? And we'll probably talk about it more in backstage. Is it looks like they'll be able to deliver this without any real hiccups.
Yeah.
Fucking touch wood.
Although I do like, it looks as if you're getting terrain mixed in with your sprues as well. I'm seeing trees and stuff. And if you look inside the box,
what that is there, that's one of the stretch goals. They've actually, the standees are just standees, and it will just be, if you've got L'Art de la Guerre or you've got whatever you happen to have as a system already, you can just get them and use them for that. But they are doing some hex games, so they're doing a specific Napoleonic one. They're also doing an antiquities one as stretch goals if they get there.
It's Alexander at Arbella, I think it is the antiquity one.
So it'll be interesting to see where they go, even if the stretch goals don't get hit and they don't get funded, or if they get hit and I end up with a copy of a game that maybe I wasn't expecting. That's nice.
Bonus.
Well, let me ask you about this ancients stuff, right? Because a period that I would love to explore, but I know I will never, ever do it in miniatures that I have to build and paint, is kind of the biblical kind of wars.
Yeah.
Would the ancient set allow me to explore that kind of thing?
I don't think, no.
No.
Biblical would be like the sea people, Hittites, and...
Oh, yeah.
Israelites and that sort of thing. This starts with the Persians, so probably 500-600 years after the fact. But this would let you do...
Would it let me do the 300?
It'll let you do... There's Greeks in there, Greeks and Persians, so you're fine for that.
Greeks.
So that will let you do all the Persian wars around there. There's also the Romans and their sort of expansionist sort of Republican era and the Imperial Rome for the sort of the later period there. So they've taken the sort of the main bulk of what people think of as antiquity for fighting. They may venture into biblical stuff later on. Who knows?
Well, who knows?
Yeah. The thing about
if me and Lloyd wanted to go into this, and we did, we got the big box of Romans.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What should he get?
What period of Romans?
Yeah. There's a couple of choices.
Because you go for early Romans, like in around the time of Carthage, then that would be cool.
Yeah.
Carthaginians.
So there's Greeks there, which you could easily put them up against because Rome pretty much ruffle stomped Greece out of the way.
Yeah.
There's even the Persians to a lesser extent. You do that. I think there's Gauls. You can go north that way. So
if there's Gauls, they can then fight with Carthaginians because as Hannibal made his way through the Alps.
Does he do Carthaginians?
Because Hannibal made his way from Spain through the Alps, losing his elephants and stuff, when he beat people, he sort of, he basically pressed him into being part of the army. Like, you can die or you can be part of the army.
Even then, when he was running around.
Right. Here's a list of the different ones, I think.
Yeah, that doesn't help, though, because it just says antiquity collection and stuff like that. There was like an 80-page catalogue that I started to flick through and went, I need to stop this or I'll cry.
Although, but you can at the very least do Romans versus Romans, because Romans fought each other loads
all the
times.
Which is an excellent way of doing things as well. You just go, let's do some civil wars.
It's just there are some larger battles that realistically, as gamers, we're never going to get round to doing it.
And unless it's a labor of love for years, decades, that you want to get out of the way.
This could be an ideal way to...
Imagine if you'd wanted to do Rourke's Drift with this, Jerry, before you'd started doing it. Would you have done it that way or the way you've done it?
No, I'd have done it the way I've done it because it's a small enough model count.
And it's a passion.
Yeah. That's a fair point.
This is not necessarily about something you're passionate about. This is about exploring something you want to know. Will you become passionate about it?
Fair point.
Or you just want to explore it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Very cool.
And it's I think
the buy-in is so low for some of these, especially with the smaller scale. Yeah. You can just go, it's not like going, I want to do a 28 mil Napoleonic army. Yeah. Oh, that's going to cost me.
Yeah.
You can go, I'll do a 28 mil standee Napoleonic army and go, well,
I can... 2 quid?
Where are you getting from? No, that's 18 mil, mate.
Yeah,
but
so you could do it like it'd be about $100.
Yeah, if you scroll down, there's like they've got
that's 18 mil as well
for the
keep going. There are other options.
There are other options. Yeah, you're looking at all the 18 mil at the moment. Yeah. You need to go past that. There we go.
Yeah, so there's the puppy.
So
105 pounds.
So there we are. The major 108 pounds, and that will get you either volume one or volume two. And for the 28 mil, because obviously the things are bigger and they need more room, they've split the volumes, whereas the 18 mil is just here's a big lump of everything that fought in the 100 days, and so it's all the factions and all the
ways. I think I would go the 18 mil route myself.
Oh, definitely. Just for the grand scale.
For the grand scale of it.
You know, this is what you talked about the first time we played Flames of War.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, there's about 19 days left on that. So if there's ever been a period of history you fancied exploring, this could be a great way to do it.
Yeah,
could be a really cool way to do it.
I just wanted to focus in on the fact that they said that they're really aiming this for people so that they can actually learn about history by playing games. And that's the really cool core concept to what they're doing there that I thought was really fun.
Snaganormy. It's all part of Snaganormy, man.
They didn't realize it when they were putting the Kickstarter together for the last 3 years, but...
They coincided it perfectly.
Fate.
Right, next up we have Parks, the board game. This is by Keymaster Games. Ben, I get the sense you're loving this.
Okay, yeah. I like walking. I like hiking. I also like the wilderness. And I've always thought it'd be cool to have like a game about walking in the wilderness. And so these guys at Keymaster Games have come out one called Parks, the board game. And it's set in the U.S. national parks. It's all the ones you would have seen out there in America.
Yep.
And you are playing a pair of walkers who are heading out across the wilderness trying to collect photos and mementos from your time in the US. Hello?
Yeah, we're still here. We're listening.
Okay.
Did you think we'd all went to sleep?
I know there was that one time where we walked off, but not this time.
We wouldn't do it on you, man. We're here with you to the end, Ben. You just continue
speak
on,
speak yourself, aren't we?
So the cool thing about this is that you have to go through the different national parks trying to pick up supplies and gear for you to take photographs and mementos from all these different places. And the whole idea is that you play through the game, go from the beginning to the end, and then once you've done that, the person with the most mementos and the most rewarding experience wins the game. It's a little bit like a game that came out a couple of years ago now called Tokaido, where you're walking through the Japanese peninsula and going throughout the islands there and sort of exploring that. And I really like that style of game. I thought it was really fun. The thing that really drew me to this one, however, was the idea of the artwork here, which I thought is just absolutely amazing, and I love the style they've gone for. Even the little wooden meeples and the fish and the water and all the things like that have been done lovingly, nicely, and I would just love to have this in my collection. I'm going all twee about it. One of the other cool things about this as well is that they're actually doing this in conjunction with a charity as well. So for every pledge that goes into this, they actually give a certain amount of this back to the US National Parks as well. So when the next shutdown comes back, you know, whenever that might be. In fact, it's still ongoing. Let's not get
No. They stopped. Fine. We're on the countdown.
It's not Stormont.
But hopefully, so that means that it'll feed back into it as well, which I thought was really good. They've also got a solo mode included in this game where you play against the rangers, so the rangers that look after the national park, and they're doing their patrol routes throughout the national parks, and so you have to try and get to the end before they do, and they close the parks up as well.
So I am so...
baskets.
That is such a relief that there's a solo mode in that game. Yeah. It means that you might actually get to play it. So if you have ever fancied yourself as... as a hiking expert going through some of the most wonderful terrain of the US, but I've been too f***ing lazy to do it. This is the game you know, for you.
There might, if the National Trust see this being successful, they might come out with a version.
I would just love that.
And it would charge you every time you played it.
Oh yeah, they would charge you, man. They would charge you every time.
See, each site you would try to go to on the tile, you know, like £5. Come on, mate, £5.
No, it's a beautiful looking game. There's only 3 days left. If you want to get in on that, you need to jump into
and
that.
It's massively funded.
Right, just to recap, remember we're giving away the Shadow Spear Battle Box to be in with a chance of winning that. You need to be a subscriber. You need to, please, just click like anyway. It seemed to do something last week. It makes a big difference if you do it. Also, remember to ding the dong and
give us a share to your preferred social network.
Just phone someone, say, hey, go and check out the Beast of War. You'll enjoy that. And then post a comment. Post a comment. God, they're getting complicated. Just post a comment about some crazy idea for the industry. We would love to read them. Right. Last week's competition winner is now up on tabletop.com. Come across, click the claim a prize, go and browse through there and see if your name is on it. And if it is, claim your prize. And we were giving away Carry On Empire. Her matron, stick it out. Okay, big thanks to Jerry, to Ben, to Justin, to Lloyd, and most importantly to you guys. Join us tomorrow on XLBS. We're going to be doing some gurning about something, I'm sure. And, you know, Justin, I have...
Oh, no.
I have a solution for your ailment.
Not again!
Yeah, join us tomorrow. Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now, and be sure to check out beastsofwar.com for the latest gaming news and gaming Let's Plays. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.